Welcome to the Interchain Podcast with your Interchain surfers, Chango Unchained and Christopher Goes.
Welcome.
So just to give all of our listeners an idea about the team behind Interblockchain Communication, can you give us a rundown?
Sure. The Interblockchain Communication Protocol has been designed by a multi-stakeholder working group composed of representatives from All the Bits, the Tendermint Company, from the Interchain Foundation, from Agoric, and various community participants offering feedback and reviewing the specification.
So where is this discussion currently being held?
We try to put all normative discussions and conclusions on GitHub, on the ICS Interchain Standards Repository. There's also a biweekly ecosystem Zoom call, which is open for anyone to join. And we've had various specification review sessions as we were coming to consensus on the final version of the spec, which were also open and generally recorded. You can find summaries of those in different documents, which are all linked from the ICS repo.
And how many people are showing up to those Zoom calls?
It varies. It does depend what time we hold them. I would say it has ranged from, for the ecosystem calls, maybe the average is a dozen, and it's been as high as 20 or 25, then maybe as low as five if we forgot to post about it on Twitter. There were about, I'd say, eight to 10 people who reviewed the specifications in some detail. We also had a physical meeting in Berlin at the end of the summer where Agoric, the Interchain Foundation, and the company all sent representatives for a very intensive 8-hour spec review session in a single conference room for 2 days.
Okay, so if you could sum up the Interblockchain Communication Protocol in less than 5 minutes, what is it, what does it do, and what are the implications for the ecosystem should such a protocol be adopted?
The Interblockchain Communication Protocol is a general set of abstractions for cross-chain communication. It's not a specific solution like a bridge or a peg or a synthetic token, although it could incorporate different parts of those specific solutions. But rather, it's a general protocol. You can use as a starting analogy TCP/IP for blockchains. It departs, of course, in the specifics, but it's similar in the sense that it defines a set of abstractions and an exact wire protocol for communication. Then just like different networking cards manufactured by different companies can implement TCP/IP and the software stack corresponding to it, different blockchains can implement IBC by providing a light client algorithm, so a way for other blockchains to inexpensively verify their consensus, the output of their consensus, by implementing an IBC handler in a module on their blockchain. A module can be a module like in Cosmos SDK or Substrate, it can be a smart contract on Ethereum, just an isolated unit of code. And then by opening up that module so that other users of their chain can create like clients for other chains using the IBC protocol.
And do you expect the IBC protocol to be widely adopted in the future?
I certainly hope so. One important point to emphasize is that the IBC protocol, like TCP/IP, is non-contentious. It does not lock you into any particular blockchain, any particular token. It's just a protocol. You could use IBC to talk to the Cosmos Hub. You could use it to talk to the Iris Hub. You could use it to talk to, hopefully, Ethereum once we finish the bridge that we're working on. You could use it to talk between two completely separate chains, which we haven't even heard of or which haven't even been invented yet. It's a protocol. And for that reason, I think non-contentious protocols can have a sort of benevolent monopoly. Just like every device in the world speaks TCP/IP, and that enables two people in totally different parts of the world to communicate with each other using the same protocol, I hope that IBC will enable different blockchains with different consensus algorithms to use the same set of abstractions and the same wire format for certain sorts of messages, which must be agreed upon, and thus talk to each other without a lot of case-specific efforts to write case-specific solutions.
Right. And that's similar to the success of the email protocol, right? Where there are many different clients, and eventually a dominant client emerged, which is Gmail. But ultimately, it's using the same protocol to speak to other email clients.
It is similar in its aims. Unfortunately, the email protocol failed to include or failed to consider authentication requirements early on. And for that reason, it's actually quite difficult to just use the email protocol as an individual because the sort of bolted on authentication after the fact tends to rely on reputation of mail servers. And if you're running your own mail server, you don't have a lot of reputation, to simplify things a bit. Mm-hmm. Luckily, in the IBC case, we've thought a lot about authentication and thought about what exactly it means for a blockchain to authenticate the state of another blockchain and come up with what we hope is a good general abstraction for reasoning about that relationship, such that future blockchains with future consensus algorithms will still have like clients, which have kind of the same structure, and they will be able to utilize IBC.
You brought up something interesting with it, which is authenticating on other chains. And I'd like to get back to that after I get a little bit more context about the ecosystem. My question is, are there other projects implementing similar such things? Because there's a lot of interoperability projects out there, but digging a little bit deeper, how do they differ from this IBC protocol that people like Cosmos and Agoric are developing versus something more specific to their platform, such as building a bridge to another chain, for example?
There are definitely lots of interoperability projects, and many of them are mutually beneficial, as in they'll be more valuable if they're both operating in unison. This is true of IBC and a lot of the existing solutions. I have not seen any protocols that aimed to be this general, to work between any two chains with like clients that can fit the IBC abstraction set. Most of the current interoperability solutions are case-specific. So they are establishing a, like tbtc, which is a very cool one, establishes a pegged token on the Ethereum chain, which is pegged via a federated signer set and some very cool multi-party compute and accountability and random subset election to Bitcoin. And that is a, I think, quite compelling solution for a very particular use case, but that's not what IBC intends to do. IBC intends to serve as a general protocol between especially fast finality blockchains. So IBC and tbtc and other protocols like that could be used together. You could send tbtc, you know, mint tbtc on Ethereum by escrowing Bitcoin, then send the tbtc over IBC from Ethereum to Cosmos, right? So the protocols themselves can also be used conjointly.
So we know that in the ecosystem, there are tons of projects that are implementing their own bridges or implementing their own atomic swaps or other swap protocols and different side chains and various scaling solutions. So how transparent would implementing IBC be in light of all of these different implementations? And when I ask about transparency, I just mean how easy is it to integrate into existing infrastructure?
The primary requirement for implementing IBC is a relatively efficient like client. This is something which many projects have already thought about because it's also necessary for bandwidth-constrained or compute-constrained computers like phones. That's basically the same problem. In the case of IBC, as opposed to a phone verifying the state of the chain, it's another blockchain verifying the state of the chain. But just like a phone, blockchains are compute-constrained since computers quite expensive, and bandwidth constraints and space is expensive. That's pretty much the only requirement. Of course, you also need the ability to alter your state machine to support the IBC protocol. For ledgers which have already launched, like Ethereum, this may be more difficult, although it's still possible to do in a smart contract. It's a bit less efficient if you can't build it into the protocol directly. For ledgers which launch in the future, which have some kind of upgradability, it shouldn't be difficult at all. There is a complete spec, which you can find on the Cosmos/ICS repository. And we aim to have IBC be defined canonically by the spec, such that implementations of the spec will be able to talk to each other without, you know, any specific testing, just implementing the spec correctly. It would be a bit too ambitious to say that we're there yet, but we're getting there.
Awesome. So going back to that authentication question, could you elaborate on what it means for a chain to authenticate on another chain and vice versa?
Sure. Here we're talking about blockchains. Actually, they needn't specifically be blockchains. But distributed ledgers, which have some sort of consensus algorithm, that consensus algorithm is run by, let's call them full nodes, fully validating nodes, which keep all the, which process all of the transactions and listen to all of the relevant network messages. Then those full nodes, as part of the consensus algorithm, often can construct a summary of what happened. So this can take the form, it usually takes the form of a list of block headers. And block headers contain information about the consensus that went into the formation of that block, which might include signatures or might include a hash for proof of work. Then they tend to contain a commitment to the state of the blockchain. So like a root hash of a Merkle tree, for example. Then that commitment can be used by a light client, which tracks the headers to check that some particular key and value pair is present or is absent from state. And this is the fundamental primitive that IBC uses to implement cross-chain communication. IBC specifies part of the state of each chain that gets reserved for incoming and outgoing IBC packets and associated metadata. And then the protocol can standardize on what parts of that state mean, so that if different blockchains manipulate it in the same way, they can generate proofs to each other and each chain can check that the counterparty is behaving correctly, has actually sent or received packets, et cetera.
And who's securing these IBC transactions? Is it the validator set of chain A and then the, let's say, proof of work mining set on chain B? How does that kind of work?
IBC itself does not introduce any particular security assumptions. It reduces to the security assumptions of the underlying protocols. So generally, that will be the security assumptions of your consensus algorithm and any additional assumptions required by the light client. So in a Byzantine fault-tolerant protocol like Tendermint, both the consensus algorithm and light client generally have one-third fault tolerance.
Let's say the destination chain is Ethereum and the source chain is the Cosmos hub. Does Ethereum need to have some sort of standard light client that is compatible with Tendermint light clients?
That would be the ideal scenario, but as adding an efficient Tendermint light client to Ethereum would Ethereum 1.x would require a hard fork. Likely, we will implement a somewhat differently architected bridge, which does have different security assumptions, but which can offload some of the data processing work to the Cosmos hub or to another Tendermint chain and remove the need for Ethereum to perform it.
Okay, so I guess what I'm trying to ask is, can a light client specified here communicate with an SPV client?
Yes. I mean, in principle, yes. IBC doesn't define, it will define various specific light clients, but the key abstraction is just the interface a light client must provide. And you can instantiate the protocol over, you know, different concrete light client implementations. Those will have different security properties, like SPV and Tendermint light clients have quite different security properties, but they will all work with the protocol as long as they have the basic functions of header verification and state verification.
Let's start with the basics. Cosmos is an interoperability protocol. What does that mean? What is the communication layer it uses to interoperate with other blockchains? So let's start with that. What is IBC?
IBC stands for Inter-Blockchain Communication. The name is general because the protocol is general. IBC is designed as a protocol stack, so a set of different protocols which heterogeneous blockchains in the Cosmos network, the Cosmos ecosystem, can use to communicate with each other, to transfer assets and value and information in a whole plethora of ways.
Okay, so when you say a whole plethora of ways, can you be specific about what IBC is useful for, how you envision the future of blockchain applications using it?
So we've designed IBC to support several initial use cases, which we think will be really important, but also to be extensible in the future to some that we probably haven't even dreamed up yet. Some of the initial use cases will be transferring assets across chains, allowing users to use, say, Bitcoin or Atoms or Ethereum, the asset, on whichever chains they wish, through the token transfer protocol on top of IBC. Another use case we're pretty excited about, delegated security, which will allow validators on one chain, one proof-of-stake chain, to
to accept liability for slashing faults committed on another chain. On top of this, we can build marketplaces or higher level protocols, which will automate or partially automate the process of finding a validator set for a proof of stake chain and providing security, and which hopefully will vastly increase the resiliency of the Cosmos network.
Okay, so you mentioned something about shared security. Can you dive into the basics of what that means? And are you provide a visual representation of that as much as possible, given that our listeners might not necessarily know how shared security is architected within the Cosmos ecosystem?
I can try. I will describe a visual representation as best as I can. I guess it will be up to you to determine whether, in fact, you can visualize it. To go back a step, the basis of shared security is that we're using a consensus algorithm in conjunction with a sort of civil prevention mechanism that relies upon slashing. So most proof-of-stake constructions rely upon slashing. The protocols are given their security. The scarcity of signing is imposed by punishments for validators who equivocate. Double sign, different hash at the same height. And we hope that that kind of strong economic disincentive will cause validators to build really good physical and digital security infrastructure that will prevent them from ever double signing. Now, that requires a lot of setup. Validators have to start running blockchains. And on the Cosmos network, we want it to be as easy as possible to spin up a blockchain. A simple conceptual mapping would take many decentralized applications, which maybe exist on a virtual machine chain like Ethereum, and translate them to sovereign chains in the Cosmos ecosystem. So in order to make that setup process as easy as possible, and in order to increase the security of many proof-of-stake blockchains communicating over IBC, we want there to be ways for additional economic incentives to be created. Maybe the sole economic incentives for one chain, but maybe in combination with native consensus or native slashing, that will provide additional assurance to people who are using particular zones in Cosmos.
If I am an application-specific blockchain that's just newly spun up within the Cosmos ecosystem, and I elect for shared security, what are the implications of opening up an IBC connection with shared security? Is that similar or different from Plasma, or is that similar or different from atomic swaps? Sort of, what are the functionalities that come with doing this?
So first, I guess, I think it's important to distinguish between the transport and authentication layers of the IBC protocol and the application layer of the IBC protocol. The sort of core IBC, or so to speak, what we're focusing our development and specification efforts on initially, is transport and authentication. That protocol provides a safe way for two blockchains to authenticate packets delivered from each other and to deliver those packets exactly once. So it provides authentication, and regardless of what you're doing with it, it's going to feature those transport and authentication layers and the associated sort of primitives and protocols that make those work. But on top of it, if you were to do shared security, that would mean that when you started your new zone, you opened a connection to, we'll call it a hub, but a blockchain within the Cosmos network, which is providing shared security. And you negotiated over that connection via the shared security protocol, negotiated with some validators on the Cosmos hub, or maybe the entire validator set as a body, to validate your blockchain and to be liable for equivocation on your zone, but being slashed on the Cosmos hub. So if the validators who are now responsible for validating your chain, if they double sign, which puts the safety of your consensus at risk, then over this IBC connection, you could submit a proof to the Cosmos hub that validators double signed and they would get slashed.
So that's kind of an interesting paradigm. It's this new thing that has emerged now, which is double sign protection across two disparate blockchains. What are the economic implications of this? So why is this needed, and why is IBC important in this scenario?
There are many answers to that question, and all of them are a little bit uncertain. It's difficult to predict the topology of the network before we've deployed it, and we're just starting to deploy it, and many other people will be involved in deploying it. But I think there are a few notable implications that we're going for. Number one is to reduce the barrier to entry and increase the possible automation in obtaining a high degree of economic security for a new zone. Eventually, the process of spinning up a zone in Cosmos should take minutes. It should be automated. There should be a market to match potential zone creators, people who want to launch a new blockchain, and validator sets, people and organizations who are skilled at running secure hardware and who have designed their business models around so effectively avoiding equivocation that they are willing to accept slashability were they to equivocate in return for some nominal reward for validating a blockchain. Number two, which I do want to mention because I think it's really compelling and hasn't been maybe talked about a lot in the context of proof of stake, is that many blockchains could choose to co-delegate security or choose to share validator sets in a way that would increase all of their economic security at once, or so to speak. So, you know, if the validators are willing, validators could accept being slashed on blockchain A for faults committed on blockchain B, and they could accept being slashed on blockchain B for faults committed on blockchain A. Extend this, of course, to many, many chains and in many combinations. But if those chains have some, say, individual diversity, if they're using different staking tokens, if there's, you know, partial but not full overlap between the validator sets, if they have different, maybe even different consensus algorithms, somewhat different risk models, then the sort of punishment or the, maybe also with notarization, the degree of attack required to subvert the security of proof of stake could be much, much higher.
Right. So with this vision, it sounds more like there are many, many blockchains that have opted for shared security. So how in this way is it different from how Polkadot is implementing their shared security? How is it different from their architecture? How is it different from ETH 2.0 cross-shard interoperation?
I would say there are many differences, but there are two primary classes of difference or differences in design philosophy between IBC and most other sharding protocols that I know of. The first is that IBC is purpose designed for heterogeneous chains. IBC is designed for blockchains with different consensus algorithms, different state machines, which do not need to be mutually comprehensible. They only need to understand small parts of each other. It is designed to allow those state machines and those consensus algorithms to do whatever they want, represent whatever semantics they want, operate however they want, as long as they fulfill a very specific set of IBC interfaces and semantics. One doesn't need to use Tendermint to use IBC or to use shared security. One simply needs to use any consensus algorithm which can fulfill certain properties, of which, in fact, many consensus algorithms we are not building, many kinds of finality gadgets, might also fulfill. We think that will allow a much wider variety of blockchains which specialize in different things, you know, fulfill different engineering trade-offs, but still all support this common IBC protocol or subsets of this common IBC protocol to benefit from each other's advantages. The second design philosophy difference, I think I would call locality. IBC is a protocol that's designed to operate with local information and local trust. As a blockchain using IBC, you don't need to worry about or even know about the state of the whole Cosmos network. The Cosmos network, the interchain, could be many millions of blockchains. You just need to worry about the ones you're connected to. Those are the only ones to which you're exposed of the risk of double signing. They're the only ones to which you must track consensus state for, etc. And this holds also true for users. As a user using IBC or using applications which make use of IBC in their backend, you can choose which blockchains you trust based on their consensus, based on, you know, the language they were written in, based on some other third party whose evaluation you trust. You can always choose which particular chains you are willing to put your trust in. because of the way IBC is designed, you're isolated from Byzantine behavior, from, generally speaking, from state machine bugs, from any kind of mismanagement or misoperation of the blockchains, which you've chosen not to trust. So if you sort of want to draw an analogy to decentralized applications, this is also true if you right now with dApps on Ethereum or on other VM chains, generally speaking, if you put your funds in a multi-signature contract, you're not at risk for mistakes in other multi-signature contracts. But it's not generally true with all kinds of sharding protocols. And we think that's a really beneficial property for IBC to have.
Right. So it sounds like there's lots of benefit for having a generalized IBC protocol that isn't necessarily tied to the Cosmos stack. So similar to how TCP became sort of the de facto communication layer for the internet, do you see that happening with IBC if it's built in this way?
We hope that it might. Certainly, different blockchains will implement different parts of the IBC stack. It's designed to be modular, such that blockchains can pick and choose. And we expect that while the key authentication and ordering semantics will be reused by most chains in most cases, since those are unlikely to vary on sort of application basis, they're just mostly dependent on the consensus algorithm. We expect those to be reused, but we expect much more variation in the application layer protocols, which different blockchains support over IBC. They will support, hopefully many will support simple kinds of token transfer protocols. Maybe fewer will support non-fungible token transfer protocols. Some will support delegated security. Others might support some kind of code sharding by passing partial smart contract execution states across chains. Many application layer protocols we probably haven't even thought of yet can be built on the authentication and ordering primitives which IBC provides.
And so you brought up that sort of faults on a chain are isolated to that chain alone, such that it's not pathological in affecting every single chain within the ecosystem. So what is the purpose of the hub in this case? Like, what is the value proposition that the hub brings if each application-specific chain needs to trust the destination chain anyway? So what is the purpose of a hub being the mediator in this case?
In IBC, you trust, or you sort of trust to the boundary of the state which you can monitor, the chains which you are directly connected to. But if you connect to chain C through chain B, where chain B is the hub, you are generally isolated. Assuming the, say, token transfer logic has the appropriate checks, you are isolated from consensus faults on chain C. So if you are a blockchain connecting to the Cosmos hub, you trust the hub, you trust its consensus to maintain token total supply invariance, maintain the application layer invariance that you care about, but you may not necessarily trust other chains connected to the hub or chains connected to those chains. You're only exposed to the chains to which you're directly connected.
Okay, so from a user perspective, let's say I'm a user on chain A, and chain A at one point or another gets corrupted. Am I able to withdraw coins from the hub or, you know, do some sort of redemption mechanism in order to protect my funds in the event that my chain gets corrupted?
I think the answer is it depends. IBC is quite good at isolating users from Byzantine faults or state machine bugs on chains which they do not use and do not trust. There are many options for recovering from Byzantine faults on chains which you do trust, but it tends to be application specific. So maybe if you also trusted the hub in the hub in this chain A, which committed some sort of fault, had negotiated a prior recovery protocol, you would be able to use an earlier state of chain A and recover some of your tokens on the hub. But, I mean, IBC is not a panacea. Generally speaking, if you choose to trust the consensus of one chain and it does strange, strange things, many of your guarantees are going to fly out the window and you will be reliant upon governance or upon, you know, off-chain governance, human intervention to restore perhaps a more canonical state.
Right. And what about something that's just more client side, I guess? I wonder if there's better off-chain solutions that kind of solve this problem that we don't necessarily need to do on the protocol layer.
Possibly. Again, it depends what you want. IBC provides a very high degree of security for a inter-blockchain communication protocol. You trust consensus. You don't trust more restricted signer sets. This is often common. And that level of security, which comes with a, hopefully we think, fairly minimal, but not zero cost, may not be necessary if you want to purchase coffee. In that case, a plasma chain or a layer two solution, which provides quite a bit less security, but is cheaper to operate, maybe a better decision and expectation. You know, if you occasionally, one time out of a million, lose the $5 you spent on coffee, it's not quite the end of the world.
Okay, so you go into a little bit about the use case of plasma chain versus an application-specific chain that is connected via IBC in the Cosmos network. Can you go into a little bit about what sort of critical softwares you expect would be deployed on a Cosmos SDK application-specific chain versus a plasma chain? Because it sounds like something sort of non-critical, such as buying coffee using a plasma chain, is sort of one of the use cases, whereas something more critical might be needed with an IBC-connected chain.
Broadly, I think that's right, although there could still be cases. If you are a particularly privacy-conscious user, you may not want to expose any information about your coffee purchasing habits to either the vendor or the plasma chain operator. And in that case, you might be better served by using a zero-knowledge shielded transaction chain and paying perhaps slightly more for each individual transaction. But generally speaking, I think that's right. We expect the Cosmos Interchain ecosystem to play host to valuable financial applications, infrastructure, decentralized exchange, maybe things like voting systems, although there are many reasons, unsolved problems in putting voting systems on blockchains. We expect it to play host to certain kinds of decentralized content storage or decentralized parts of other data availability systems, which require a high degree of censorship resistance, because it's quite difficult for individual validators in Cosmos to censor. So it's much more censorship resistant than something like Plasma. We expect it to play host to applications where quite a bit is at stake. But still, we also expect it to scale with demand. There's no limit to the number of chains which can be interoperating using IBC, since each chain only needs to interact with the ones it is connected to. And moreover, we sort of expect that topology of the network to grow to reflect the underlying topology of the commerce which it is supporting. Most commerce in the world is local. If you're paying a vendor in Shanghai, or if you live in Shanghai, most of your payments are to and from other people in Shanghai, or maybe in greater mainland China. Very rarely do you pay or receive money from someone in Maine and vice versa. So commerce is local, in other words, and we expect that the topology of the Cosmos ecosystem may grow to reflect this. Blockchains will exist, payment blockchains, for example, that primarily settle local transactions, and we only really need a global blockchain when occasionally someone from Maine wants to buy things from someone in Shanghai.
So on the blockchain layer, this suggests that a local blockchain in Shanghai should just process payments within its local area. And if I'm a user on Shanghai blockchain A, trying to pay Maine person, is the main person on main blockchain B? How does that setup work?
So in the model of main and Shanghai, there are two blockchains or maybe three. Certainly there are local blockchains, one for main, one for Shanghai, and most local commerce happens independently and in parallel on those two chains. Then when occasionally, maybe 10 times a day, someone from main wants to transact with someone from Shanghai, they have two options. They can connect the two chains directly over IBC and send funds over that IBC connection, or they can connect through another chain, which we'll call a hub. They can maybe a hub. The hub, in fact, is likely to serve other pairs of cities who so intend to connect and can provide some beneficial security properties by and sort of reputational properties by securing all of those rare but high trust required connections at once.
That's strange to wrap my head around, just because when I think of Bitcoin, you know, I think global payments, even local payments. Why is it separated by geography, I guess, within the Cosmos ecosystem?
Great question. I think there's reason to expect the eventual network will have many local components because commerce is so local and because global blockchains are expensive. It's faster and cheaper and probably more incentive aligned, like if all the validators are in Maine or in Shanghai, to trust and come to consensus with people who are in your local commercial network on transactions within that network. Certainly, there will be many blockchains in the Cosmos ecosystem, we hope, which will continue to serve global payments, which is a very necessary use case. And it may so happen that a fair amount of commerce is evenly distributed across the globe. But still, there could be different kinds of specializations within that commerce. And that is then the line which we would expect to delineate between different chains within the Cosmos ecosystem. Some chains might specialize in shielded payments, providing a high degree of privacy. Others might specialize in speed. Others using some kind of zero knowledge proof for compression so they could have really, really, really high transaction throughputs quite quickly. Others might specialize in just being low cost or being deployable at will in case you had unexpected demand for global transactions.
Okay, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of blockchains to be specialized to this degree before, but it sounds like within the Cosmos ecosystem, you're really optimizing for performance and speed, and then you would use IBC in order to work with another chain that is highly specialized for its particular use case.
Maybe one way to draw this design distinction is thus. There are two things which is very hard to do with current distributed ledgers almost unilaterally. It is extremely hard to launch one, to launch a large distributed ledger which has a wide user base because it takes time to accumulate that user base, because you need many people to secure consensus, because you need connections to other applications, and it is extremely hard to upgrade state machines and to cater to the needs of a wide diversity of applications on a single state machine. So far, a lot of engineering effort has gone towards solving the second problem, making it easier to upgrade state machines, trying to come up with virtual machines which can run many different applications, trying to come up with sort of generic ways to glue a wide variety of users together on the same blockchain. In Cosmos, in many ways, we're mostly focused on solving the first problem, on making it much, much easier to launch a new blockchain which can just interoperate with the world of existing blockchains. If you need more throughput, if you want to try out a new state machine, if you want to launch a risky zero-knowledge proof algorithm without, you know, putting the Bitcoin market capitalization at risk of an inflation bug due to a mix-up in your snark construction, shout out to Zcash, you can do that with Cosmos. And you do it instead of by modifying an existing state machine simply by launching a new blockchain. So we're trying to make launching a new blockchain with high security and with the ability to interoperate with the world of existing blockchains and existing users as seamless as possible.
So are you anticipating that this would make the lives of new blockchain application developers much easier?
In the long run, probably yes. In the short run, launching blockchains as opposed to deploying smart contracts has perhaps more power and slightly more responsibility. There are a few more things you need to think about, although I'm sure higher level solutions will also emerge on top of the Cosmos stack. In the long term, we certainly want to make developers' lives easier. We want to give them more flexibility in what tooling they use by providing a modular stack and by providing protocol components that they can pick and choose or even implement themselves as they will. But I think even more so, we want to provide developers, and into developers, I would also class people who really don't develop blockchains at all at the moment. I would class local community leaders. I would class people in existing economic networks who want to possess a degree of control over the workings of their own economic systems that they probably don't have at the moment, and that a global blockchain really wouldn't provide. And we hope that Cosmos can provide that kind of flexibility and sovereignty.
So that reminds me of local community examples. I think there's one community in Canada, a tiny town, and then they transact in their own local currency. Call it Catcoin. Do you anticipate Cosmos to be the solution for the Catcoins of the future?
I guess if we're asking whether it's the solution, we have to identify the problem. I don't know if I have enough background in local currencies to make correct pronouncements here, but I would guess that one challenge is the coordination cost. If you always use a local currency or use a local currency within your community, as soon as you go to the coffee shop the next town over, suddenly you have non-interchangeable money. That coordination cost may have been a substantial enough barrier to lead to, you know, currencies standardized at the level of the nation state. There are plausible reasons to expect that IBC in the Cosmos ecosystem will drastically reduce that coordination cost by simply preserving the local currency, preserving local control, and preserving separate assets, separate underlying assets, but also providing seamless exchange with, you know, a floating market between, say, Alberta and Toronto, or between two, I think I just compared a province and a city, shows my knowledge of Canadian geography, between two next door neighbor cities. A liquid market might exist on centralized exchange, and when you go to the coffee shop the next city over to buy coffee, you don't even notice the difference. The price is quoted in your local currency, you pay with your local currency. I don't know if they're the solution to all problems, but I think the primary challenge of coordination costs could definitely be alleviated.
Right. I'm trying to envision this new world where, let's say, every blockchain, every asset is sort of able to interoperate, you know, on the blockchain. So in the future, let's say there's a CryptoKitty, you know, which is an NFT. And then there's, let's say, Catcoin, which is the local currency of Alberta. And you and I want to transact. I own a Catcoin and you own a CryptoKitty. So in the future, I guess, how would that work technically on, you know, on chain? So CryptoKitty is on the Ethereum chain and then Catcoin is on, you know, some random blockchain over in the corner of the Cosmos ecosystem. And somehow they're connected, let's say, maybe four hops away from each other. You know, how compelling is this use case? How does the world look with that implemented?
Well, my hope is, in fact, that if we are successful, eventually no one will notice. The Cosmos ecosystem will become a new kind of, you know, virtual plane of existence for code and logic with the security and consensus and sort of protocol level contractual guarantees that blockchains can provide. So if, in fact, our chains are connected, even if by four hops, as long as those four hops are relatively known blockchains and there exists a path of trust between them, it should be the case that you and I just drag some images on our exchange application, come to consensus on what price in Catcoins you will pay for my CryptoKitty, or vice versa, I forget who had which, and then trade. We've programmed into our applications some trust assumptions about the world. We've decided that we each trust some set of blockchains in order for us to be able to transact. IBC connections will need to exist between blockchains, which we both trust to a sufficient degree. But it's always up to us. If you and I really don't trust each other, maybe we live in opposite parts of the world, then we'll need to find some intermediary hub, which we're both, you know, willing to trust instead of a different path. We'll need to find maybe some deal with someone who will assume Byzantine risk and respond in return for a small fee, all of that kind of auxiliary ecosystem economics. But the final process should be seamless.
Right. So speaking of trust with the Bitcoin blockchain, if two people who don't know each other want to transact, they don't need to trust each other because the Bitcoin blockchain is sort of the notary or the intermediary that enables this property of trustlessness. So in this construction, is the Cosmos hub or a hub chain in general, is that the same intermediary that acts as the trustless mechanism?
Certainly it could be. To be clear, the trust model here is, I guess you could say, a superset of Bitcoins. If two users trust the same blockchain, they can always exchange without trusting each other. And when I talk about trust, I'm not talking about the user's accepting counterparty risk from the other user. If you and I are trading CryptoKitties for CatCoin, our interactions are still mediated by some set of blockchain state machines. We don't need to trust each other. We just need to trust the blockchains. So perhaps those blockchains are, perhaps we're connected through the Cosmos Hub and that's the only chain. Perhaps there's some more complex path and we both have to trust the blockchains in that path to a sufficient degree. But all of the interaction which, you know, transfers CryptoKitty to one of us and CatCoin to the other is still mediated by state machines.
So that's interesting because let's say the path of trust is maybe 4 or 5 hops. And right now users need to grasp this concept of probabilistic finality on Bitcoin, which is to say 6 block confirmation times, right? What is that confirmation time in this construction with 4 hops, let's say?
We expect it to be quite quick. One pretty hard requirement of the IBC protocol is fast finality. In order for the sort of economics of the protocol to make sense, blockchains need to have consensus algorithms which can quickly finalize blocks and sort of never fork or never reorganize their chain. Tenement provides this, as do many finality gadgets and other often sort of classical BFT style consensus algorithms. And it can be overlaid on top of a probabilistic finality network with some threshold, like you mentioned, of 6 confirmations, although that's quite a bit slower. If, in fact, the 4 blockchains through which we are transacting are all fast finality, then the throughput will be something on the order of the sum of their finality times. So if you're using maybe 2 local and 2 global Tendermint instances with 1 second and 3 second finalities, respectively, the total time for our CryptoKitty and tokens to be swapped might be on the order of 10 seconds. There are probably many faster pipeline optimizations that we haven't quite yet considered, so I'm sure that will go down.
So far, we've only been talking about sort of transacting payments. What about, let's say, 50 years into the future, 100 years into the future? Could we possibly be swapping bandwidth or storage space? You know, what other dynamic applications are there where IBC could be useful for?
Well, hopefully many. One reason I'm personally quite excited about blockchains in the Cosmos network specifically is that they are quite effective in allowing us to construct explicit incentive models for meterable or measurable resources, which previously we had been sort of forced to accept the implicit mental models caused by, you know, gradient descent of companies behaving in their self-interest. But with blockchains, we can construct them more explicitly. For example, we could perhaps choose to enter into binding contracts with other people whom with we transact to require carbon neutrality or carbon offset, or require that when we participate in a chain of value flow, even if that's a very deep chain across the world, maybe, you know, the supply chain for a modern car or a complex electronics consists of thousands, tens of thousands of companies and many more subcontractors. In fact, hopefully, blockchains will provide us the ability to come to voluntary agreement on binding ways in which we want the whole world to behave and solve coordination problems like carbon emissions.